Of course, Burning Jaw was only one example of the many curses which waited for those who sinned by violating the Archangel's solemn rituals and admonitions. The various curses of pestilence, the periodic outbreaks of disease, which always followed, sooner or later, upon the violation of Pasquale's directives for public hygiene, were another, as were diseases like scurvy and rickets, which followed upon violation of the writ's dietary laws. There were literally hundreds of curses, and the rules and religious laws to which they were attached impinged upon almost every aspect of Safeholdian life. What Lewis had done was to hunt down all the prohibitions punishable by things like spontaneous combustion and explosions of the Archangel's wrath, and use them to point her towards things which could be made to explode. At the moment, she and Seamount were using a combination of what a chemist would have called potassium chlorate, antimony sulfide, gum, and starch.
"So far, the fuse failure rate is only about 1 in 1,000, Seamount continued. "And Dr. Lewis's suggestions about our powder mills, those quality control issues Merlin was talking about, have been extraordinarily useful, too."
He shook his head again, and this time his smile was decidedly tart.
"I was pretty proud of the quality and consistency of our powder," he admitted. "And rightfully so, I think, compared to the kind of crap everybody else was turning out. But every lot is still at least a little bit different from every other lot. Dr. Lewis says it's because nobody can guarantee uniform quality for the saltpeter or the charcoal, or for that matter even the sulfur we're using. But she's managed to make some significant improvements in that area, mostly by insisting on inspection and processing standards, fanatical enough to satisfy Zhuo Zheng herself. And she's also come up with some really good suggestions about ways we can proof each lot of powder. We're firing representative charges from each lot now, using a testing high-angle gun at a fixed elevation and measuring the ranges we obtain. That lets us label each lot with the range achieved using a standard proof charge, so the poor damned gunner who has to use it in action is going to be able to judge ranges and accuracy a lot more effectively."
"That sounds like Sandra," Macklin acknowledged with a smile of his own.
"She made another suggestion that's turned out to have some interesting implications too," Seamount told him.
"What kind of implications?" Macklin asked a bit warily.
"Well, way back when Merlin first suggested the possibility of corned powder to us, he told me that one reason corned powder was more powerful than meal powder was because there's more space between each grain, since the space meant the fire, and all gunpowder really does is to burn very quickly, can burn even more quickly and completely. According to Dr. Lewis, that's not entirely accurate, though."
"It's not?" Macklin asked, and tried not to frown.
"No, it's not," Seamount said. "Mind you, it describes the consequences of what happens accurately enough, and I've come to the conclusion that he was explaining it in a way that would make sense to me. But according to Dr. Lewis, and my own experiments working on trying to stabilize burning rates for combustion fuses, smaller grained powder actually burns faster than larger grained powder. Yet the larger grains produce far more power. Before we started producing corned powder, we were using a 30-pound charge in the long 30-pounders. Now we're using a 9.5-pound charge. That's how much more powerful the new powder is, despite the fact that the grains are burning slower, not faster, as they get bigger. So I've come to the conclusion that what Merlin told me was actually completely accurate, even if it wasn't."
"Excuse me?" Macklin blinked at him, and Seamount chuckled.
"Corning the powder helps a lot with consistency and those quality control issues of Merlin's. The biggest thing is the way it keeps the ingredients from separating, and corning it makes it less susceptible to damp, too, especially since we've started glazing the grains, the way Dr. Lewis suggested. But the other thing it does is to expose more of the surface area of the powder to ignition simultaneously. And that allows more of the powder to ignite before it starts throwing unburned powder down the barrel in front of the explosion. In other words, even though the actual combustion rate is lower, we're burning more of it simultaneously. And that means we're burning more of the powder in a shorter length of barrel than we ever managed before. Which, by the way, also means the powder is leaving a lot less fouling, less ash behind, because it is burning more completely. Does that make sense?
As a matter of fact, it does, Macklin said slowly.
And I think it's exactly the sort of thing Merlin wants us to figure out on our own, for some reason.
You're probably right, Macklin agreed, carefully not noticing the sharp look the Commodore gave him.
Well, Seamount continued when Macklin failed to rise to the bait. What I hadn't really considered until Irvin and I started talking this over with Dr. Lewis was that, logically, making the grains even bigger should give us even greater power for a given weight of charge.
Which is going to push bore pressures even higher, Macklin said thoughtfully.
Oh, believe me, we've been thinking about that aspect of it too,
Seamount rolled his eyes.
The good news there is that I've just had another letter from Hausman, and he says Merlin's suggestion about using wire to reinforce the gun tubes should be perfectly workable, according to his mechanics. They say producing that much wire's going to be a royal pain in the arse, but he's got them working on new wire-drawing machinery, and the machinery to wind the wire uniformly around the gun tube under a high enough tension, too. And he's confident they'll manage it, eventually. Once they do, he says, he'll be producing guns which are going to be both lighter, stronger, and a hell of a lot cheaper. Unfortunately, his best estimate is that it's going to take at least a year, and in the meantime, the gun foundries are still the major bottleneck where the Navy's concerned. We can build ships faster than we can cast as many guns as we're going to need, and he's not certain what shifting over to rifled pieces will do to our production schedules. And then there are all the little problems involved in making and filling hollow shells with enough quality control to keep them from being as dangerous to us as to their targets.
Wonderful,